Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Well, James, I was not expecting that. I'm sure you were not expecting that either.
Why not?
Yeah, I guess there's no reason why you would not have expected that, I guess.
It's been a weird playoffs because there's been a lot of lopsided games. There was some sort of stat going around that there's been the most games decided by three or more goals percentage-wise in the first round ever so far. There's not been a lot of close games. There's been a lot of games that have just been blowouts. Been a lot of close series, but not a lot of close games.
What do you think that is? Do you think that's the goaltending, like a carryover from the regular season in some ways? The officiating? More power plays?
Yeah, I think that it's more higher scoring like it was during the regular season. So I think that that's part of it. But also, I mean, it's probably just a little bit random too, right? Look at this series. There's only been the one game that was a nail biter, and everything else was, it's been kind of weird.
Yeah, I don't know that I'd say, I don't know that this has been like that kind of series, but in some ways it sort of has. The game three feels closer, but the Leafs are up 3-0 and Tampa obviously makes it close. The second half of the game, they really control. And then obviously game four is a blowout. So game one was a blowout for the Leafs. I don't know. So obviously what's kind of, natural to start thinking about is like, is the same thing happening again?
Is panic?
Yeah. And that's what's
Richard Panic.
It was Richard Ponick.
Now I think it's Richard Panic for the Leafs.
Well, so here's what I think is difficult, James. I understand what Sheldon Keefe was saying after game four, where he basically said, listen, we came to Tampa, you want to get a split, we got a split. It doesn't matter if you lose 2-1 or if you lose 7-3, basically. The problem is there is just so much history built into this. And so games like that feel so reminiscent to games in previous years. And that's where, you start to wonder, is this happening again? Are they not finding a way to win really important games in really important times? Because game four, they could have conceivably, had they handled Tampa's pressure, they could conceivably have won that game and come home to close out the series. And now it's not going that way. So how do you break that
down? Did you see that other stat that was online that the Leafs are 1-8 in a situation where they're ahead in a series going back to 2017?
Well, I've witnessed it, as you have, as everyone listening has. Like, I don't, the stat is not really surprising to me. I mean, they haven't gotten past the first round. That's the stat will be like that. So what do you make of it? Like, how do you separate?
Well, you could not get past the first round and just not lead in series very often. You could just like lose series. You could just like lose in five games or whatever, but that's not what's happening. What's happening is that the Leafs are actually having a lead. And then now, I mean, like three of the eight are against Montreal last year, right? Because they lose three in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it four? No, because Montreal won the first game of that series. So three of the eight are from there. Two of them are from this series. So there's five right there in the last 2 years. Washington, they were up, right? They were up against Washington early in that series. I mean, I don't know how much similarity there is between this team and the Washington team, but it certainly feels like, Jonas, that it's, and you know, it was like talked about probably, it felt like too much at the end of last season, but the whole killer instinct thing is part of it, where you have a team kind of down a little bit and on the ropes the way they had with Montreal last year. And it just, you know, it's like the old WWE thing where the guy comes back to life, Undertaker comes back to life, and then, you know, you don't close it out, really.
So I guess what I'm struggling with is like how much to make of one game. Because, like, I mean,
well, I think the thing, Jonas, like, if they were down 3-2 right now, I think I would make more of it than, like, the series is still tied, and yes, they still do have home ice advantage. And this series has been so weird where every game has been its own unique snowflake, and there hasn't been any momentum or anything. And so what the Leafs have to do is forget about that game and come out for game five and play like they did in the games that they won. That's all there is left to do. And it's natural, I think, for like the media and for the fan base to look at this and be like, oh boy, here we go again. But, you know, this series, I think this series is going seven games. There's three games left. They need to be the better team in two of them. They're capable of doing that. I don't know. I think that that's all there is to say.
So we should just end the podcast there? 5 minutes?
Well, I think that's all there is to say about like the history and all that stuff. Like, we can certainly talk about like what's going on with the team and where they need to be better. And I mean, yeah, they played like garbage in game four. Tampa played like garbage in game one. So, you know, and John Cooper said we gave them a freebie, then the Leafs gave them a freebie back, right? So if the two-time defending champs can lay an egg in this series, then I just don't think it's over, Jonas, just because they lost game four in the way that they did.
Thank you, James, for that. I was thinking it was over. I don't think it's over. Well, who would think it was over? Do you think people think that?
Well, then what are we talking about then? Like,
I don't know. We seem to swing so wildly from game to game. It's like, oh, they win game three. They're cruising, and then they lose game four, and it's like, oh, it's over. I just think we need to be a little bit more steady on the rudder, but I get it. Like, history is what it is. Like, this team has not. Here's the thing. Like, I was thinking about Tampa. Like, so Tampa gets spanked, obviously, in game one, but they have they've earned such a benefit of the doubt, obviously, with their back-to-back cups, where it's like, eh. Like, you kind of give them a pass. The Leafs don't get a pass for games like that, and that's why you question them until, like, you prove otherwise. There's going to be an assumption that, oh, it's happening again. But so, like, let's get into what actually happened in game four right away. And we can even go back before the game starts. Sheldon Keefe decides to start Kampf, Engvall, Mikheyev. Fine. He also decides to start Mark Giordano and Justin Hall. Questionable. And obviously,
why do you think he did that? Because he, like, that was the five-man unit that he wanted to use during the game? Or, like, what was the thinking behind?
I've been thinking about that. Yeah,
it's okay playing those forwards to start the game, but you don't have last change, and you put out, you know, a D pair that, like, you might as well put out your best D pair, right? Because, like, if Tampa is going to counter with some of their best players, then you want to be ready for it.
Yeah, that's the only thing I don't totally understand, because you're exactly right. Like, if Tampa had put out Kucherov, Stamkos, and Palat, you're going to want Muzzin and Brody out there, because that's been your matchup all series. So I don't totally know. I don't totally get it. I mean, Tampa did.
Well, Keefe was asked about it, right? He didn't.
Well, he wasn't asked in a way that was going to get an answer. But so what's interesting is like Tampa actually, he actually did kind of get what he wanted. Tampa countered with their third line. Like they put the Hagel line out there. And what ends up happening is Justin Hall, frankly, just couldn't handle, like they were all over them in terms of pressure. He couldn't handle that pressure.
Tampa got a change too, though, right?
Tampa got a line change. Tampa got their number one line out there while Hall and Giordano were still stuck out there, while Mikheyev was still stuck out there for over a minute.
Justin Hall is getting completely killed, but where was Kasha? Like, there was no one for him to pass to on the wing.
Yes. He had a couple opportunities that he just kind of threw the puck away. So, it starts bad, obviously.
I don't know why there was no one for him to pass to. I'm not really sure. Like, I don't know where. Well,
I think there was still a change. I
yeah.
But obviously,
there was some confusion there where I don't know. I'm saying it wasn't 100% on Justin Hall on that play because there was some sort of scramble nonsense going on.
Sure. But the point is, like, you know, Tampa's going to come out like hard and heavy and like their crowd's going to be into it. And like, you're just going to have to survive that initial storm. Like, that's always how those games go. And they don't survive the first shift. And then obviously, like a couple minutes later, another goal where it's just like kind of like a weird play where Perry kind of boots it around the boards. Muzzin doesn't get control of it. It bounces off him. Campbell poke checks it right to Bellemare and it's in the net and it's 2-0. So it's like, again, like, can you stop the snowball from rolling? And they can't. And
Pat I had Maroon, to chuckle. It's like Bellemare and Maroon and like.
Well, the Maroon goal, like, James, is the one that's really bad. Like, that's the one that can't happen. It's their fourth line brutal. Against your top line. It's against Riley and Lyubushkin, and they just get beat. And that can't happen because if that goal doesn't go in, suddenly it's only 2-0. You sort of survive the storm a little bit. And I thought what was interesting is like the final like 5 minutes of the first, the Leafs started coming a bit. Like the Tavares line started to get going a little bit. They started to generate some time in the offensive zone, generate some looks. So like that third goal and then the fourth goal, obviously, to start the second is just backbreaker over.
Yeah, I mean, when that happened, it's like, okay. On to like the post-mortem after that.
Yeah. So I don't know. Like, what do you make of that? What do you make of the start? What do you make of how they came out? Like, do you think it was just a matter of like Tampa was down in the series? They're at home. They lost the last game. They came out with all kinds of energy, and the Leafs just couldn't handle it. Is it that simple?
Yeah, I don't know. It feels almost a little bit, Jonas, like the Leafs weren't expecting to win that game, so they didn't, kind of thing. Like they didn't come out like we have to win this game.
I don't think that's an unreasonable conclusion. I mean,
that's what happened in the Montreal series too. Game 5 happened, it's like, yeah. Well, we're up 3-1 and like, you know, like we're in a good spot, and Montreal comes out with their season's on the line and they're on fire and the Leafs aren't ready for it, which is, I mean, it's, how can the Leafs not be ready for something at this point? Like it seems impossible. Shouldn't they be ready to play for their life every single game?
Yeah, and honestly, that's been the story in games like that where they haven't dictated the terms of the game. Like, they've kind of let their opponent come out and set the tone. I mean, you go back to the Montreal series, that happened a bunch. Obviously, the Columbus series. But let's pick into some of the issues with their lineup right now. So we talked about Hall. I think Lyubushkin's had a tough series. What would you do if you were Sheldon Keefe for game 5, knowing, of course, that you're at home and like you'll have a little bit more control of the game?
So their best pair has been Muzzin and Brody.
Yes.
To like dramatically change the D, you would have to break up that pair.
Yes, which I just don't think you can do. Do you?
The only thing that intrigues me a little bit is like Riley Brody, but like, I don't know if you can trust that pair to play against that team's top line.
So let's play that out. So you put Riley and Brody back together. Who's playing with Muzzin?
Hall.
Okay. And so then you're playing Giordano with Liljegren?
Or Sandin or whatever. Like,
so that
probably Liljegren or Sandin.
So that, well, I don't think you can play Sandin now. Like, to me, that's just way too hard to ask. But so James, like, that was what I thought they should have done going into the series. Because I like that you really had three
pretty balanced
pairs. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just don't know if I would do that now. Like, I would change things, especially with the way things have typically gone this year for Muzzin and Hall.
Yeah, that's true. And they're almost boxed into what they've got with the pairings they've got now, right? Like, there's not a fix that makes sense.
Well, let's look at each thing. So Lyubushkin,
with last change, you want a pair that you can put up against their top line. A big problem in this series, Jonas, after watching it play out for four games, is the Leafs don't have a headman.
Yes, that is a problem.
If I'm Kyle Dubas, I'm watching this series, it's like, I want one of those.
Unfortunately, there is only one of those.
He's a cheat code, man. That guy's, he's good.
So I think the issue is twofold. I don't think Lyubushkin should be playing where he's playing. That doesn't feel like a stretch, especially in this series. The problem is, like, what do you do? So let's say you want to take Lyubushkin out or move him down. Who do you play with Riley, if not Brody, like you're talking about? What do you do? Like, Liljegren is the other guy who's played with Riley a bunch this season. Their defensive numbers were awful.
Victor Hedman, 62% possession in the series. So they're basically, like, in the Leaf zone.
Focus, when he's James. On the ice. We'll get to him. Don't worry. We're going to talk about him.
It's related.
It's related. But so what do you do on defense? And so the other issue is, obviously, do you break up? Do you take Hall out? Do you put Liljegren back with Giordano? The context I should add is the numbers for Giordano and Liljegren in this series were the worst. Really bad. And Keefe said himself he thought Liljegren looked inexperienced or showed his inexperience.
Well, that's part of what I don't. Social media has this outcry about Liljegren, and it's like, well, he wasn't playing well.
Yes.
I get that he had a really good season and everything, but the problem, I think, Jonas, is that Tampa was targeting that pair.
Yes. So I would do nothing, is what I would do. Leave it. You're at home.
It's like I said, they don't have a lot of options.
Well, as you pointed out to me when we were talking during the game last night, like, right defense just remains an issue.
Yeah. Well, because when they, at the trade deadline, they needed a right defenseman and there wasn't anyone available. So they got the best left defenseman they could. And it's like, yeah, okay, Giordano's been pretty good. Although I would say Giordano has been, his weaknesses.
A little victimized,
have,
yeah.
Yeah. His weaknesses have shown in this series more than they did during the regular season, you know, and he's kind of showing why Keefe has kind of had him on that third pair and not gone to him as much.
Yeah.
So they don't have their right side. They don't have enough there.
No. And so I guess the question, you wrote about toughness over the weekend and more about their fourth line. But so I think one of the questions that they have to decide right now is, how much do they value the physicality, the edge, the way he defends the net of Lyubushkin versus the deficiencies he has in terms of skill? How much do you value Liljegren's, his skill set in terms of being able to move the puck better, but not being as good at the other stuff? Like, which do you value more? Because to me, like, in a series like this, I sort of think I might value the Liljegren stuff a little bit more. And yet, I mean, you saw the way those first two games went. You see the way sometimes he gets exposed around his own net. So, I don't know what I would do. I'd probably just leave it, like I said.
To be fair to Liljegren, so yeah. both he's played two games.
Yep.
Lyubushkin's played four.
Yep. The numbers for Lyubushkin are not good.
That's what I was going to say. To be fair to Liljegren, I mean, we pointed out that his numbers were not good. Lyubushkin's played every game and his numbers are not good. Lyubushkin last on the D in possession in shot attempt share at 33%.
Well, and so James, like, to me, it feels like almost every time that him and Riley have been out there, they've either been in their own zone, and when they've been in the offensive zone and the puck comes to him, the puck dies, the play dies.
Yeah.
And that's something actually that Keith brought up when Lyubushkin first joined the team, and like his initial reluctance to play him with Riley was that, like, they liked having a guy who was actually capable offensively there in those situations.
The thing I was thinking in game four is that, like, it kind of hurts Riley a lot. Like, you're not getting,
yes.
Like, they've only scored two goals at even strength with Riley on the ice, which is, he's such an offensive weapon that in an ideal world, he would be impacting the game a lot more than he's been able to. And you look at expected goals with Riley on the ice, and they're getting crushed pretty badly. You know, they're only generating, they've only generated 2.09 expected goals when he's been on the ice in four games. Like, that's not enough.
And so, well, and so part of that is him and Labushkin are playing mostly with either Matthews or Tavares, and neither of those lines is kind of winning the battle that you're talking about. And so, do you want to talk about the Matthews line first or the Tavares line first?
Let's go back to Tavares. Yeah.
Okay. So Tavares is still looking for his first 5-on-5 point of the series. Him and Nylander, I thought, were a little bit better in game four.
Now, did you think they were good early in the game, or yes, do you think it was like dead cat bounce when they're like out of it? They played
no. Well? I thought they were really good when it was, I mean, it's 3-0, so you can make it that way you will. But I thought when it was 3-0, 5 or so minutes left in the first, they had something cooking. They had some stuff going, which they had not had going. But James, like, so this is why throughout the second half, we were talking about it, we were writing about it, why this was such an issue that these two guys didn't have it going and something was amiss, is because you get into a series like this and suddenly the Matthews line is just getting swallowed up. And it's like, well, where else are you going to score? So what are you seeing from Tavares? What are you seeing from Nylander? Do you see any signs of hope? What would you do with that line when you keep them together? Would you put a different winger there? What would you do?
That was Tavares' best game, but I just don't know if
a lot
of that was when the game was out of reach. And the issue he's having is he's just a speed issue. And, you know, we said this on the last podcast, so I don't need to repeat myself, I don't think, too much. But, you know, Tavares is just, he's having a hard time maintaining control of the puck and winning battles for the puck.
And getting open.
Yeah.
Like, he's barely generating any shots. Now, the good news for the Leafs is in game four, he started to actually generate some opportunities. But, man. And so this goes back to some of what you're talking about. Like, now he's not facing Hedman at all, basically. But he's still facing Sergachev and McDonough and Foote, and like, those guys are just fucking huge. And he's, and like, if you're not quick and you're not bigger than those guys, like, it's, I don't know, like, it's tough sledding. It's, and that's why I like at least the idea of getting him back with Nylander, because at least Nylander maybe draws some attention, opens up some space. But this is like going back to the regular season. It feels similar where they just kind of can't win their matchup. And now it's not an easy matchup. Like, they're facing Stamkos and Kucherov. So,
well, there aren't a lot of easy matchups against this team, are there? You know, no. Cirelli has impressed me. I know we're going to talk about Matthews and Marner next, but Cirelli has been,
yes, amazing.
Full value. He's been so good. So you can, it's amazing that the Lightning can lose a whole line of very effective players that were such a big part of winning the cup, and they can still be as good as they are.
Yes. Well, they have acquired basically a whole other line that is not the same, but same vein.
I talked about, you know, Riley not generating enough offense when Riley's on the ice. I mean, Tavares is even like another rung below in terms of how many expected goals and scoring chances they've generated with him on the ice. He's 10th on the team.
Mm-hmm. It tracks with what you've seen. And I thought Sheldon Keefe made a good point about what was happening is he said, you know, when they're not getting out of their zone quick, they're ending up just spending the whole shift defending. So he kind of made this, he pointed out, like, it's got to be like 10 seconds or less where you get out. And what was interesting is during that stretch that I was talking about in the first, they were out quick and they got onto offense, and that wasn't happening in the previous game. So it's like, if they can,
so some adjusting.
Yeah, so some adjusting. So if they can start to do that a little bit more often in game five, maybe they can start generating some opportunities, start rolling around in the offensive zone and get something cooking. The question I have for you is, like, so the way they ended the game is they had Bunting back with Matthews and Marner, and they had Kerfoot back with Tavares and Nylander. And obviously those three guys have played a bunch together. Would you start game five that way?
The problem for me is that Bunting does not look like Bunting.
Yes.
I don't think Bunting should be on the top line. No, I don't, because he's just clearly not able to play the way that he did during the season. I mean, he's playing at, what would you say, like 65-70%. Like, he's not.
Yeah.
So you can't put him on the top line, especially when Matthews and Marner need more help, not less. I mean, so we went through it with the D, like the options for how you could change things and why it makes it difficult to change the pairings. Up front, do you see like a natural, you know, they experimented with Nylander on the third line a bunch during the regular season. Like, is that
and in this series?
Is that an option, or do you look at how well the third line has played throughout the series and been? The thing I would worry about is that you can't really count on Engvall, Mikheyev, and Kauf to, like, they've already produced a lot in this series. I mean, I think it's a lot to ask them to continue to go to that well for offense.
Yes. I would keep those guys together, and I would try to obviously bury them and get them out there against the Stamkos line. Maybe lighten the ask a bit of Matthews and Marner. Obviously, get them away from...
What if they should flip Nylander and Marner, like, just for some shifts or something?
I'm glad you brought that up. Let's talk about that. Forget about some shifts. Like, do you think it's something they should consider just starting the game that way?
They didn't do it all year, though.
No, that's not true. They did. They started the season that way.
They hardly did it. Right. They hardly did it all year. Like, it's been... I can't remember a game that they've started with Nylander with Matthews... What was the last one, like November or something?
No, it was more recent than that. I mean, I can find it if you want to stall for like, well, I guess you're thinking since like mid-January. You're right. They've been together basically exclusively. So you're not, let's see here. When would we have to go back to? Probably like December maybe.
And that's not to say that Nylander has looked great with Matthews or anything like that, but...
Well, the idea would be twofold, James. The idea would be you get Marner away from Cirelli because Matthews is going to get top attention no matter what. And you give Marner to Tavares. And like they had stretches when Matthews was out where they looked pretty good together. So that would be the argument. You're right. It's been a while.
Yeah. It just seems like they decided that that wasn't what they were going to do. And they were going to keep Matthews and Marner together no matter what, which
is. Well, they were unbelievable together in the second half. So they're like, there's no reason to do it, you know? Yeah, you're right. Wow. Mm-hmm. I'm scrolling. The last time I see it in my thing file, November 12. You're right. Good call.
That's what I said. Yeah.
You're right. No, congratulations.
It just feels like Sheldon Keefe lost belief in Nylander with Matthews at some point early in the year and then never went to it again.
So would you consider doing... So one combination we saw that worked, now that this is problematic just because of how these two guys have looked in the series, given their injuries... One line we saw that worked was Bunting, Matthews, Kasha. But I guess given how those guys have played, that's probably not an option.
Yeah, Kasha also looks... He's had some good moments and he's had some bad moments. And he looks like a guy that hasn't played in a long time for some reason.
Because what that would do, James, is you could conceivably get Nylander and Marner playing with Tavares, which would be interesting. We haven't seen a lot of that. Barely, I don't even like just some shifts here and there. And then you could play that third line. I guess the question in that situation would be, are you leaving Matthews? Like, are you hanging out Matthews out to dry?
The other thing too, Jonas, is that like, you have last change, right? So like yes. you don't need to, it's almost like on the road, they need to break.
Yes.
Matthews
that's what
and Marner
I
up.
Just my story. Yeah, exactly.
Cause at home you feel okay about it because you want to have that weapon where you and Matthews and Marner together. And
so here's what's interesting, James. So I'm going to write about Matthews and Marner right after we're done recording this podcast. And I was looking at some of the numbers. So these are the minutes that Matthews played against Anthony Cirelli by game. Game number one. Actually, I'll go backwards. Game number four, he played 534 against Cirelli. And it was just completely one-sided for Tampa. Game number three, also in Tampa, 1106 against Cirelli. Game number two, 658 against Cirelli. Game number one, 157.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you're looking ahead to game five, one thing that Keefe can do is what you're talking about, ensure that Matthews and Marner, if they stay together, which I think they probably should when you have home ice, ensure that they're not playing against those guys. Because if you look at the minutes that Matthews and Marner have played against Stamkos, they have dominated them. And it's been the other way when they've gone against Cirelli. So with home ice, you've got home ice in two of these next three games. Use it. Use it as much as you can, right?
Yeah, like, just keep get them Matthews away. And Marner away from Hedman and away from Cirelli, and they'll do more damage than they've been able to. And because it's been a different series when depending on who they've been on the ice against.
So what do you make of that? Because like, so I think it's interesting when you pick it apart. It's like they're two of the whatever best players in the world. They're getting really high level attention. Like the guys they're facing are great players. Like Point is a great player. Killorn's a great player. Cirelli's probably going to win a Selke at some point. On D, they're facing Hedman, who you talked about, who's a monster. Eric Chernak is really good at what he does. So like they're facing really hard competition, but like you're kind of built on the fact that they're going to be able to give you something. And early in the series, they did. And now these last couple of games, it's been a little harder for them to get going. So like how much slack do you cut them? How do you evaluate that?
Well, I mean, I think that the tail of their series is going to be what happens in the last three games.
Yeah.
You know, they need them to, there can't be the disappearing act that there's been. They're going to have to really make an impact. And, you know, it's great that they put up all the points that they did in game one and two and three and, you know, got them out to that 2-1 lead in the series. But really what they need from those guys is not that they have more points than they've had in the playoffs in the past or more goals. It's that they win them a series. And here's the time to win them the series. I didn't think Matthews and Marner were not very good in game four.
No, I think that's fair. I mean, Matthews did hit that post or it was a crossbar on the backhand, but other than that, pretty quiet. I think that's right.
Pretty quiet. And the thing too, Jonas, is that where you really count on those guys is on the power play. The power play has not been very good in this series.
No, overall. It has not. That's a really good point. I'm glad you brought that up. Let's get back to that in a second.
What's the power play? 16%? Do you have 16%? It in front of you?
Yeah, it's 16%. 3 for 18, I think. They like, and one of the issues they're having is like Tampa's doing a really good job of just pinching off Matthews. Like they're not giving him any room.
And even that 16% is misleading because there's a 5-on-3 thrown in there where they did score one of those goals, right? So at 5-on-4, they're much lower than 16%. They're like whatever 2 for 17, and so you know you're looking at, you know, they're more like 13% or whatever.
Yeah. So 5-on-4 power play. Actually, I have that 11.8%. They're 2 for 17 at 5-on-4. You're right. But the other point I wanted to make on Matthews and Marner, James, one thing I noticed in going through the goals that they have scored in the series or generated as a line, it was all quick. They struck really quick. It was off the rush a few times. It was forcing turnovers. And so I think if you're looking ahead to game five and you're the coaching staff or you're those guys, that's something that you want to get back to. And that was something that Keith talked about. You know, he mentioned it with Tavares and Nylander, but also as a team, that when they're spending so much time in their own zone, they're not getting out quick. What ends up happening is the Matthews line gets out there and they just end up spending a whole shift in their own zone. So he said like it's kind of like symptomatic in some ways of what's happening with the team when the team is getting hemmed in and dominated that way. It's hard for Matthews and Marner then to get going the other way. So that's going to have to change. And one thing I wanted to add on Tavares and Nylander is I'd like to see them get a few more starts in the offensive zone. So that's something I think that they can do to get those guys going a little bit more.
Well, because Keefe's been looking for offense, so he's been putting Matthews
every time almost
in the offensive zone much more frequently. You know what's interesting in this series, and I know it's like kind of small sample size with the four games, if you look at Natural Stat Trick, expected goals look better for quite a few of the Leafs compared to the scoring chance numbers. Like the scoring chance numbers are bleak.
So what do you make of that?
I mean, it's just the way that expected goals, you get credit even for like shots from the outside, and I think you get a little bit more credit than you do on the scoring chance side. So mm-hmm. I wonder if there's like some of the opportunities that aren't that impactful or like Matthews is at 41% scoring chance share at even strength.
Yeah.
Marner's at 39%. Even Muzzin's at 39%. There's a lot of players that are really, really low. I mean, it's not a good sign when David Kampf, like, God bless the guy, but he leads the team in expected goals. He leads the team in scoring chance share.
Yeah. I mean, it's good in some ways that he has two 5-on-5 goals, and But when he has 2 5-and-5 goals and Tavares has none and Nylander has none, does Nylander have five? No, I don't think that goal wasn't, one was on the power play, one was 4-and-4. So like you're 4 games in the series and neither Nylander or Tavares have a 5-on-5 goal.
Nylander hasn't been on the ice for a 5-on-5 goal and neither has Tavares.
That's not good.
They've been outscored 2-0 5-on-5 in the series.
So two other things and then we'll take a break. And then we have Podbag, right?
Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff in there.
Okay. So two more things. We talked about the fourth line heading into the series. The fourth line is what it is. It gets them a goal in game 3, but it just, I mean, Tampa scored twice from their fourth line in game 4. Important goals, too. I don't know what you can do. Like that, you're kind of stuck.
We talked about that coming into the series, that we didn't like that matchup, that Tampa had a lot more going on in their fourth line, and it has played out that way. The Leafs don't, especially with Bunting and Kasha diminished, they don't have enough. They don't. Their fourth line's not good enough. No. What did you make of Spezza, and would you keep him in the lineup?
I haven't seen a lot. I would still keep him in the lineup. I just think he can give you more than the other guys.
Yeah, I think he's been okay. I mean, it's not like he's playing tons of minutes, but you know, and the underlying numbers are okay.
I just don't know what I'm getting. Like, what are Clifford and Simmons supposed to give me besides like physicality?
You know, if Bunting or Kasha or whatever, you decide that then it's not working, you could foreseeably put Spezza up the lineup for a few shifts or whatever. Like, you could mix him in if he's going.
I think that point is past. I'm not sure that that's an option anymore, honestly.
That Braden point?
Yeah, that Braden point has passed. So the other part about game 4 that we should mention is Jack Campbell gets pulled after giving up 5 goals. Hard to like really fault him that much.
Goalie controversy with Sjogren coming in and playing well. That's a joke.
Were you starting to think like after the fourth goal, I think Chris asked me in the press box, like, do you think he's going to pull him? And it's like, I said to him, no, like, because they could still conceivably come back in the game. You pull him at 4-0, you're basically saying, we think the game's over. At 5-0, I get it. Like, I don't have a problem with that. Did you?
Well, that's what Sheldon Keefe was explaining to him on the ice, right? Like there was a big conversation where Campbell was saying he wanted to stay in and keep battling. And Keefe essentially was saying, like, we're thinking about the next game at this point.
Yeah, because, like, imagine, like, you keep him in. They lose 5-0 and he gets hurt. Like, what are you accomplishing for the minute chance that you're going to come back and win?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with you. I think that's probably the line, even though the 4-0 goal was god awful.
That's the Colton goal?
The one.
The Colton goal was not good.
The one that Campbell flubbed on with his glove. I mean, that's the worst goal he's allowed in the whole series.
Yes, that was not a good goal. You're right.
What do you make of breaking news this morning, the Islanders firing Barry Trotz?
I did not see that. I've been like engrossed in everything Cirelli and Matthews and Marner.
I know that has nothing to do with this, but it's interesting.
That's surprising. Wow.
Yeah.
Isn't he the reason like they got to like the conference final like just a year ago?
The previous 2 years he did, right?
Yeah, the previous 2 years. I guess it was his fault, not...
That makes very little sense to me.
Not signing Casey Zizekas for 4 more years and Ross Johnson for 3 more years.
Trading Devin Taves, right? Like I'm watching Colorado just absolutely dismantle.
Didn't they trade Nashville? Him for like 2 second round picks too? Like basically nothing? Not nothing, but like nothing consequential for their team.
The Islanders were in cap hell and they were doing some goofy things.
And they've signed Kyle Palmieri, which did not work. Anyway, we don't want to talk about that, but that's interesting. He'll get scooped up like whatever. What's the top coaching job out there? I have not spent 30 seconds thinking about this.
I think Detroit would be intriguing, potentially, if you think that they're like going to start making.
Does he want to do like a rebuild? Like, is they're still probably a few years away.
Yeah. You know, they got tons of cap space. They don't have any bad contracts. They got some good young players coming. They might be in a position where they start signing free agents. And
what about James? Winnipeg?
Yeah, I don't know if I believe in that Winnipeg is a contender.
You think it's done?
I think they're just kind of like one of those teams in the middle that's not going to get out of the middle.
I'm just looking through the teams. Yeah, you could be right. I just don't see a lot of other. I don't see a lot of options.
What about if they lose the series, the Toronto Maple Leafs?
No. I mean,
just putting it out there.
Let's not jump the gun. Let's not go there yet.
Yeah, we had a request in the pod bag to not answer questions that are about after the series, which
I think that's fair. Let's do that.
I think that that probably makes sense because we're getting a lot of questions about, are they going to fire so-and-so or are they going to do Wichem-Wezel and whatever? And, you know, like, there's no point in like getting super theoretical.
Well, the series, like you said, is not over. So let's take a break and then let's get into the pod bag.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, James, I am very excited to get back to Toronto and get some takeout. I'm not sure what I'm going to get. I'm definitely going to go to my bakery, I think, and get like a nice, delicious cinnamon bun if I have time.
You're on the road. You're eating out every single day, every meal, and all you want to do is get home and eat out.
There's no time. There's just no time.
There are, Jonas, there are 58 questions in this thing. All right, so I hope you're ready. I hope you're ready to answer all 58.
Let's start with 58.
I'm gonna sit back and drink my cup of tea, and while you answer every one.
Okay.
Jeff wants to know: can you guys seriously get a sports psychologist on the show to explain why this team is the way it is? Do they really have demons like in their closets, like Paul McLean said they do? When they were up 3-0 in Game 3, it felt tenuous at best. When they were down 3-0 in Game 4, it felt like it was over. When they need to put the hammer down and step on a team's throat, they can't do it. They shy away from the moment. Why? Why? All in capital letters with multiple Y's and a lot of exclamation points. I think I understand where that's coming from, but it is Game 4, and we need to see how this plays out. I mean, now is when they need to show that they're different, which is sort of what you wrote in your column after Game 4. Like, they now is... You know, Sheldon Keefe said in Game 7 against Montreal that, you know, now is our time, or whatever the saying was on the Amazon documentary. Now is the Leafs' time. Now is their time to show that they can be something else. And they're up against a very, very good team.
But yes, let's remember that.
They need to play their best game of the season in Game 5.
What I would add too, James, is like what I've learned just watching sports is like what sometimes happens is once you do get over the top once and you do it once, something changes. And I just look at the Raptors, who for years, like they at least got past the first round, but like they were playing like, anyway, it doesn't matter. But the point is like once they got over that hump and won the title, and obviously the title is different than winning a series, but something changed about them and their swagger and their confidence and their... What you're talking about just was there. Like you even saw it the next year. They lost in 7 games to Boston in the bubble. And they like really pushed Boston like all the way. And Boston had more talent than them. And even this year, you saw the remnants of that championship team. Just this belief, this swagger, and like this. And obviously they got blown out in their last game in the second half. But like there's something that I think changes once you do it. And I think until the Leafs do it once... Like, I think if they win this series and they get over that hump, I don't think we'll be talking about that anymore. That would be my thought.
I mean, unless they do it in round two.
Yeah, but I think that will... What I'm saying is I think that will go away. I don't think... I think once you've shown to your... You're proven to yourself that you can do it and that you do it, I just think it'll go away, and I think they won't have that whatever it is that kind of holds them back in some of these games, where it's just what you're talking about. It's like they're just not coming out looking to step on your throat. So I don't know if that's true. That's just what I think.
A lot of the questions are similar. People are asking, how do they come out like that? How can they play so poorly in such an important game? Why is this team so psychologically flawed? No killer instinct at all. They go ahead and they coast. They play down to inferior teams. They live on the they live close to the edge. Please explain. I don't know if we can explain. This team has not figured it out. Or at least there's not evidence that they figured it out yet. You know, they need to win two of the three remaining games and show that they can figure it out.
Well, and I meant to mention this, James, in the story I wrote after game four, but this is where home ice advantage means something. And like, that's where getting the edge on Tampa in the regular season matters, because now, you know, the series comes down to three games and two of them are in your building and you're going to have fans and it's going to be loud, and like, you have a chance to like just dictate everything, because like you could feel it being in the building, like in Tampa, it was fucking rocking in there. And so like, if you can take away the crowd early in a game like that and you can weather the storm, you can survive. But when you've got at least home ice, that's not an issue really. Like you've got the crowd on your side. You can really set the terms of the game.
The Leafs needed to get out of that terrible first period down only 1-2 and then still have some life in the game and then come out. You know, that's what Tampa was brutal in the early in game three, and then came out and played really well later in the game and made it really, really close. And that's what the Leafs needed to do, that there was just no pushback.
Yep.
Josh wants to know, living abroad, I've been getting up in the middle of the night to watch these games.
Oh, man.
My question is there any reason to do so for the rest of the series?
Definitely, for sure.
You think the Leafs are going to win this series, Jonas?
I don't know, but they have a very good chance of winning the series.
It's a close series. I mean, like a lot of the underlying numbers and everything have this as the closest series in the first round so far. So as bad as the Leafs played in game four, they also played really, really well, especially in game one. A lot of questions about John Tavares. I feel like we talked about him enough on the last podcast. If people want to hear kind of my solutions and concerns with John Tavares, I would say listen to that podcast, because I don't think I need to repeat kind of, it'd be overkill to say the same things over and over again about him.
It's just concerning, like that this was the concern from the regular season. Like this is not surprising in some ways.
Well, so Nathan says Tavares has looked his best this season when he's filled in for Matthews, when Matthews was out with the suspension and the injury, on a line with Bunting and Marner. Why not switch things up a bit? Put Nylander with Matthews and Kerfoot.
I don't hate that. Obviously Matthews, like you said, hasn't spent a ton of time with Nylander this season, hasn't played barely at all with Kerfoot, but I don't hate it. I think there's a really interesting push and pull for a coach, is like, how much, panic's not the right word, but when do you press a button? Like, when is the right time? Because we saw in the series last year against Montreal, he stuck with Matthews, Marner, and Hyman. And one of the criticisms was that he didn't change it like they weren't getting over the top.
They clearly had nothing, right?
So like, is now the time to change it? Or do you see how game five goes at home? You have last change. You can get them away from Cirelli and then potentially change it for game six.
And then, I mean, you might be potentially changing it the last game of your season, right? Like everything on the line.
Which is something that they did in the Columbus series, where in like game five, he went to Tavares, Matthews, and Marner, right? Is that what it was?
Yeah. Yeah.
And like,
yeah, this and that, super and that, line.
Right. And then the criticism was, well, like in the last game of your season, like you're going to a line that's never played together or played together like very infrequently.
Which is sort of fair.
Which is fair. So I don't know. Like it's a tough line. I would like to see Nylander, Tavares, Marner. I would give Tavares all the help I can give him and just hope that Matthews can be Matthews and pocket you a goal.
Well, then, especially when Tampa has last change, they've got to decide what they're going to do.
Yeah, and they're going to have to, they would have to go Matthews, right?
Again, the problem with Jonas is they haven't tried that all year.
Or they haven't tried it a lot.
Zachary has a question. He says, I barely noticed Matthews in game four. He's had a fairly quiet series by his standards. I don't know if, I mean, he was good early in the series. what's going on there? Are the Lightning shutting him down, or does he look off his game to you? You probably didn't see it, Jonas, but on the broadcast, they were highlighting Matthews and they were highlighting just how, you know, he wasn't getting touches on the puck, or he was fumbling the puck a little bit more than is customary for him or not. I don't know if they were making too much out of, do you think he's at the top of his game right now?
It's hard to say how much is him and how much is the attention that he's getting. You know what I mean? Like they're spending so much time defending. Like they're not really generating a lot offensively. Like I think I had the numbers in the two games in Tampa when they were on the ice against Sorelli and Point, I think it was. No, was it? Yeah, Sorelli and Point, I think. Marner and Matthews, the shot attempts were 15-1 for Tampa. So yeah, I think that speaks for itself. It's like they're just not getting anything. So like I think what I pointed out before is like if they can start getting some stuff quick, like if they can kind of hit some quick strikes, get them away from Sorelli, I think that's when they can make an impact. They're just facing really tough competition. Like playoffs are hard, but like you have to get over the hump at some point, and that's what they're paid to do.
Let's mix in a palate cleanser question. Gilbert wants to know, Jonas, did you get a chance to go outside on Saturday night?
I did.
You didn't just work in your hotel room?
No, I went out for some tacos. Some good tacos.
Did you go to Jackson's?
I did not. I let Sean McKenzie decide where we go on the road.
Oh, nice.
He picks good restaurants for us.
I went with him in LA. We went to an amazing restaurant. Yeah, he knows where the spots are. He's like got like the apps or something that tell you like where the, what's that app that tells you the best restaurants in the city?
Are you talking about like Yelp or something?
No. There's like it's not like Yelp. It's, I can't remember what it's called. There's like an app that's just for like high-end restaurants.
There's an app for that.
There is an app for that. Burr wants to know, what's your take on the officiating so far? We've seen a turn in the view of the reffing among hockey fans in the postseason. Before, the common complaint was the refs disappeared in the playoffs. When you look at it, they were calling 0.5 more penalties per game in the playoffs. Fans thought they weren't doing enough. Now they're closer to calling what's actually going on, and fans are complaining they're calling too much.
Yes.
Is there a problem here? And if so, what do you see as the happy middle ground? I kind of like them being a little more aggressive early in the playoffs just because it sets the standard a little bit higher and they're not letting go a whole bunch of dumb stuff throughout the playoffs, and you don't get to the final and it's just like a rugby game.
You can't have it both ways. You can't be mad at them when they don't call anything and then get mad at them when they do call everything. Like that, I just don't think that's fair. So like I'm fine with it. I mean, and as Muzzin said after game four, like clearly the terms have been set, like you can adjust now. And I can't remember whether it was Keefe or whether it was Muzzin or someone else pointed out, or maybe it was Tavares, that they're calling more like stick fouls and hookings and slashings and got to adjust. Like they're taking too many penalties, but like some of those penalties are like the game is over. So like, I don't know how much it mattered in game four.
We're running up on time here. Nick wants to know, can you break down what happened in the first period? You know what it looks like to me, Jonas, is the Leafs are having a really hard time with Tampa's forecheck. And
yes, that's exactly what it is. They could not break the puck out.
They're really, really keying on, they're really making the Leafs defense move the puck. And they're really, they've found some sort of, I don't know exactly what the technical term would be for it, but they found a weakness in the Leafs breakout. And whether it's
I don't know what.
Say quoi?
Yeah, exactly. You know what I would do? You know what I think is happening, at least to my eye, and what I would do if I was coaching Tampa, knowing as little as I do, I would go after Labushkin, I would go after Hall, and anytime they've pressured those guys, they've turned the puck over.
I think that is what they're doing.
Yeah.
Don't you?
I mean, yeah, and that's what was happening in the start of game four. Like they were just going at those guys. And if you, and even Liljegren, like if you put those guys under pressure, they're going to buckle. Like that's just not their skill. And that's like why Brody and Riley are like so essential to them, because they do that well. Anyway,
you know what I like about if you put Brody with Riley is you could just lean on them and just give them like huge minutes. Like, shouldn't Riley in previous playoff series, how many minutes a game has Riley been playing? In previous playoff 21. Series, he's only playing 21 minutes a game in the playoffs. And Brody's been really, really good. I just wonder if you go, and I know it's weird to change the D pairings now, and I know it leaves your other pairings in a tough spot. But then the thing I like about it is that you could play Riley like 29 minutes and you could play Brody 27 minutes.
Yeah, you know what, James? I know you got to go, but I think that's a really good point. And it's basically what Tampa does. Like, we're just going to play our best defenseman a shit ton. We're like, so your four best defensemen are Brody,
that's
Riley,
what
Muzzin.
That's NHL teams do, Jonas. That's
Riley,
what,
Brody,
playoffs,
Muzzin,
that's
Giordano.
What most teams do.
Yeah.
And I know Riley's not the best defensive defenseman in the world, but I would feel better about him being out there than Lyubushkin or Liljegren, or even with the way Giordano's played, or Hall.
Yeah, but Giordano is one of your four best D. Just play Giordano, Muzzin, Riley, Brody. Play them all a lot. And play, Riley the most.
Yeah, the problem with playing those four a lot is there's three of those guys are left defensemen.
Yep.
So you can't do that.
Well, maybe you have to ask Giordano to play his offside. I don't know. I think he's done that, or did that in Seattle this year, I think. Yeah. I don't know. Like, I just want my best defenseman playing, and like, I think you're
well,
right.
Well, that's
the,
what I
the
like
The problem,
about.
James, is like, Lyubushkin's playing 13 minutes a game. Like, he's playing a lot either.
Right.
Anyway, you got to go. We will be back after game 5. We'll see what happens, James. It's going to be interesting.
Here we go.
Thanks for listening, everyone.